Hello, and welcome to the long-delayed episode 33 of Cavalytics. Cavalytics is a podcast about the NBA's Cleveland Cavaliers with a focus on statistical analysis. We are recording this about 25 minutes after the Cavs' 30-point Game 3 victory over the Golden State Warriors in the NBA Finals. We are hosted on SoundCloud and are available on iTunes or wherever you normally find your podcasts. You can find us on Twitter at CavalyticsNBA, and you can email us at CavalyticsNBA@gmail.com. We try to respond to everything we receive, so feel free to hit us up. I am Keith Carter, a lifelong Cavs fan now living in San Francisco, a pretty subdued place on this particular evening. My co-host is Arnav Chabra, a PhD candidate at MIT and a savant in NBA analytics. How's it going, Arnav?
Pretty good. How about you?
Well, pretty good. I'm not
much
quite
better.
Sure. Yeah, much better. I'm not quite sure what to make of what happened tonight.
Yeah, I mean, as I've been tweeting, I think a lot of it is simply home court. And it's not just that, you know, they're home and they're playing better. The crowd is helping them score better. They're actually doing other things better too, like defense, rotations, etc.
It's just crazy, these enormous swings. I mean, Golden State won, what did they win the first two games by, like 50 points or something? Like, it's just...
Yeah, it was 15 and 33, so it's 48, yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, they won by an average of 24 points. We now won this game at home by 30.
Right.
I think exactly. This is a little bit unprecedented. You mentioned that we should do some research on this to figure out just what's going on. But you told me something about the net rating at home versus on the road. What were those numbers again?
So before the finals, so we don't mess up the numbers with this final series. Before the finals, Cavs net rating at home was 22.2. And away
plus 22.2.
Plus 22.2, yeah. Right? So they're beating teams by an average of 22.2 points per 100 possessions. And away from the queue, it was 4.2. And that 4.2 actually includes that blowout against Toronto in Game 6. So before that, it was actually a negative number. I remember checking this.
Huh. Yeah. I mean, look, part of that's affected by Games 3 and 4 in Toronto, but that's because we lost those games.
We're obviously including that in there.
Yeah, those count. If you were to include the two blowouts in Golden State, it would be
even worse,
profound.
Right. Of course.
So.
Yeah, like the separation is just getting bigger and bigger for the Cavs away and home.
Yeah. I mean, there's a number of topics to take on here. LeBron had sort of an odd game.
It was a weird game. I don't think he wasn't hyper efficient, but he got his jumper going randomly.
Basically for, you know, one of maybe the third or fourth time this entire season, his jumper was working for him.
Well, the reason I say random is because it's a little unprecedented, right? So I think I just attributed to chance, which is what I mean by random.
Yeah. Yeah, he had 32 points on 14 of 26 shooting. He was 1 of 2 from 3, but he took a bunch of deep twos, so that's contained in his
overall percentage. So many deep twos.
He had a bunch of sloppy turnovers. He'd sort of looked like Tristan Thompson or Mozgov, like it's just sort of unable to like corral the ball.
Yeah, even in like that fourth quarter, do you remember when he just kind of stepped out of bounds and then randomly dribbled? Like nobody was even pressuring him there.
Yeah, and then he had 6 assists to go with the 5 turnovers, a steal, and 2 blocks. Sort of weird game out of him. He carried the Cavs in the third quarter. The Warriors.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. He was still really good. I'm just saying, like you said, it was a little weird at some points. I thought it could have been much better and much cleaner. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. One of the people I watched the game with tonight pointed out that, you know, the first quarter was the Kyrie Irving show. The second quarter was really the Tristan Thompson show, and we should get into that because I thought that was pretty awesome. And then the third quarter was LeBron, and with a little bit of Richard Jefferson sort of sprinkled all throughout. And you know, J.R. Smith obviously played well as well.
J.R. is, I think. Actually, we kind of missed J.R. here, but
we did,
he was
yeah.
7 of 13, 5 of 10 from 3. He was great.
He was great.
Much better defensively as well.
Yeah, and he missed some open ones tonight, too, so I think there's actually some upside here.
Yeah, he made some weird, his usual, you know, step-back ones, a couple
right.
of them.
And the half quarter at the first half buzzer didn't count. It was off by one frame of the camera. So, you know, less than a tenth of a second.
Right. So before this game, I was looking at some 3-man lineup numbers, and Tristan was actually in the top of all of them. he and Kevin Love. So all of our best lineups against the Warriors, at least in a two-game sample size, have been with Love and Tristan in the lineup.
Huh.
And all the bad ones had Shumpert sprinkled all over the place.
Yeah, Shumpert didn't look so hot tonight. He finished...
One of five.
He was putting the ball on the floor a ton. There was a stretch where, like, three times in five possessions, he put the ball on the floor and it didn't work out. He did have one time when he put the ball on the floor and then he did a baseline pass to LeBron and LeBron just missed it, that I thought would have been a good play had it connected. But in any case, yeah, he was one of five from the field. Somehow he was plus nine, so I think...
But everyone else was plus 24, plus 33, plus 21, plus 24, plus 11, right?
Right.
Like, plus nine was actually one of the worst. I guess Fry was the only one who was...
Yeah, the Cavs did have one player with a negative plus-minus, but we'll get to him in a minute. Yeah, Shumpert... I think Shumpert is doing a good job defensively. I think that he is able to guard both Green and the Warriors, you know, all-universe guards. And so I think that, you know, gives them some flexibility with this switching scheme.
I just don't know why his numbers were so bad in the first two games. I think it could be because he only sees the floor against good players. Mm-hmm. Right, like if he's seeing the floor against when Curry and Claire on the floor, yeah, of course I think that affects his negative net rating. But he was in every single one, and nobody else was on there.
Right,
nobody else was the common factor amongst those three man lineups. And the reason I use three man lineups is because four man and five man lineups, the sample size is too small, so you can't actually take too much out of it.
Right. Yeah, if you look at any specific five-man lineup other than the starting lineup, it's sort of hard.
It's usually like 5 or 6 minutes max.
Right. The Cavs are still struggling with Sean Livingston a little bit.
As always. It's always been the case. This is not just this year. Last year in the finals, in the regular season, it's always been the case.
Yeah. He had 5 points on 2 of 3 shooting, 6 rebounds, 3 assists. He did have 3 turnovers.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't call him a significant factor or anything tonight, but...
Yeah,
he has given us so many problems, and he just never misses that stupid mid-range shot.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the real story of the night is that Draymond, Steph, and Clay all sort of laid eggs. So Draymond was 2 of 8 for 6 points. Steph was 6 of 13 for 19 points. Clay was 4 of 13 for 10. I think both of them started 0 for 5 or 0 for 6. So they got better late, and there was a period sort of...
Mid-third
quarter toward the end of the third quarter. Where
I was kind of scared at that point.
Uh-oh feeling came in where...
Because, like, you know, at some point you think, like, these guys have the firepower to come back and...
Well, they have unprecedented firepower. They have the best firepower, arguably, in the history of the game at closing big leagues.
Easily in the history of the game. I don't think it's even arguable at this point.
Yeah.
In terms of firepower...
I was just trying to stop angry tweets. But, yeah, I agree. Best ever, unquestionably.
Yeah. And we're not even saying, like, they're the best ever team, which they probably are, but I'm saying in terms of, yeah, like you're saying, just in terms of firepower, there's no, I don't think any other team is this
right,
many.
Sorry, yeah, maybe I should be more clear. Their ability to make, you know,
ridiculous shots to come back.
Yeah, exactly.
And, yeah, so I think it is, because if we lose this game when we were up for, like, most of the first half, like, that series, right? Like, you're down 3-0 and then... You can't beat this team 4 times in a row, especially when you get defeated so badly.
Right. Do you think the Cavs will be able to carry some of this swagger into Game 4?
If it's at home, which it is. So.
Yeah. I mean, why are we even doing this podcast? Is the answer is whatever the home team is wins? Like, you know, that's not very interesting. But it sure seems that way. Lately.
But, you know, it's the Warriors, so you can't rely simply on home court either, right? Like, these guys can pretty much win anywhere.
Yeah.
And I can assure you, Green, Thompson, and Curry aren't just going to settle for 35 points.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think that's right. I don't understand it. So, Steph and Clay were 8 of 27 in Game 1. They were 13 of 24 in Game 2, which is obviously good, but not... That's good.
That's pretty good.
They were 10 of 26 tonight.
Yeah. No, I think their Games 1 and 3 have been horrible, and their Game 2 was the only good one. One thing I want to add for Steph, though, is that people don't realize his gravity is unprecedented. Like, it is not even close to being anything I've ever seen or anyone's ever seen.
Yeah.
I think ESPN did a they ran some bunch of algorithms just to see, you know, what the closest guy is and how closely guys stick to it, and Steph was like far and away number one on that list.
Yeah, it makes sense, and he obviously should be, because he's like, you know, probably at least a standard deviation better than the second best shooter in the NBA, and so it makes sense that he
was also on that team.
Yeah, right. it's interesting. Yeah, there was a conversation. Look, we didn't do a podcast after game two. We should probably talk a little bit about why. But one of the comments that I saw was, how many players would the Warriors need to bench before the Cavs could win a game? And that kind of stuff sort
that's
of
bothers me. That's a disingenuous conversation. Like, that's a disingenuous
all conversation. I know Curry didn't have, you know, a 50-point game in games one or two, but what was happening is the Cavs were focusing so much energy on him. And perhaps because of that, perhaps because of luck, the Cavs were actually able to somewhat contain him. But the consequence of that is that everyone else gets a commensurate boost, or maybe even disproportionate boost in efficiency. And that's why the Cavs lost games one and two. Like, they just
couldn't. I wouldn't say game one was that reason, because game one we lost when he was actually on the bench. That run happened without
him
on the floor.
Fair point.
Unless his gravity is somehow pulling people to the bench.
Anti-gravity or something, yeah. Black matter.
Game two, absolutely. And even in this game, I think his gravity is always a problem, right, when he's on the floor.
Yeah.
It's never not a problem.
Yeah. He looked sloppy. He had six turnovers again. The Cavs are forcing turnovers, I think the Warriors had 18 turnovers.
18 turnovers, yeah, exactly. Cavs themselves had 13 with LeBron having five, which is, yeah, he needs to clean up those turnovers.
LeBron
he had the most turnovers in the first two games of an NBA Finals ever, I think.
Huh.
It was like 11. It's not that much, but
right,
somehow.
Right.
Apparently he's the only one who's ever done it. So.
Huh. Yeah, I mean, I don't quite know what's going on with Steph. I mean, to some extent, the conversation sort of got tabled because of what happened in games one and two. But he
probably
is not
a little banged up, which he is, I think, because you heard this. You heard he's not going to the Olympics, right?
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't.
But he's not the only one. Everyone is banged up,
right,
at this point. And I think it's kind of disingenuous to say everyone is banged up, because we don't know what levels of, you know, quote unquote banged up they are.
Right.
Like, injury isn't just injured or healthy. There is a big spectrum, and he could be anywhere on that spectrum. But since we don't know, I don't think we should give him the benefit of the doubt, because we're not giving other people the benefit of the doubt either.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
I think it's just a little unfair to other people.
Do you see the picture of J.R. Smith's right hand?
Yeah, exactly.
For the listeners who haven't seen it, somebody tweeted a picture taken. I don't know when that picture was taken, but his right hand has a huge open sore on it that got caused in game one diving for a loose ball. It's on the sort of lower left side of his right palm. And you can imagine that affecting his shooting touch, although it didn't seem to impede him tonight. But
it could have been 8 of 10 otherwise.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, but yeah, I mean, look, the point is everyone sort of has injuries. And Kevin Love didn't play tonight, so
you know, he has a concussion.
Yeah,
do you think he'll be back
a little bit? I don't know.
Let's actually table Kevin Love till the end of the podcast. I think that it's a little bit longer. I just wanted to just get through the rest of it, if possible.
Okay. Delly was a -10.
Yeah, he hasn't been good. Just period.
He played 7 minutes 39 seconds, which is hardly any, and he was -10. That's not obviously not all his fault, that there's, you know, he's on the floor with four other people who obviously weren't playing well during that 7 minute stretch. But sheesh, he was the story of last year's finals. I was hoping that his sort of mediocre play through the first three rounds was a red herring, but
the last year's finals, like, I thought he was actually pretty good defensively, but offensively he was pretty horrible.
Yeah,
even last year's finals too.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he was only one of two tonight. It's not like he's, you know.
No, he's fine. I just don't think he hasn't been, you know, regular season or early regular season Delly, basically.
Yeah.
And I think it kind of makes sense, right? Like, his handle isn't the best, and he's in the most athletic guy on the floor. So, like, when teams play, at least this is my theory, when teams play tighter, he just has a harder time getting that separation that he needs to pass the ball or on the pick and roll.
Yeah.
Just to, because the thing is, like, you can move the ball all you want. If there's no separation generated from that movement, it doesn't matter. You're still going to hit a contested shot, right?
Yeah. You mentioned that after game two. I thought that was a pretty profound comment that I hadn't really, I don't know, thought about in that way. Like, the common narrative is like, oh, ball movement creates open shots. But if a team is covering your brand of ball movement effectively, then that's not necessarily the case.
And it's not even, and I would actually say that in that case, if you're not getting any separation, isolation ball is probably even a better option, honestly.
Because you're not going to turn the ball over.
Right, exactly. But I'm not saying isolation ball is the answer. I'm just saying there's you need to find ways to get that separation. But if you're not getting the separation, then you need to stop passing the ball.
Yeah. Yeah. Or at least they shouldn't have to answer haranguing questions about why they're not passing the ball.
Like even tonight, the Cavs had 20 assists on a night when they shot 50% from three. That's not that good. It's not like the ball movement was much better today.
Yeah.
It was just that they were attacking those mismatches well. They were shooting well. And they were scoring near the rim, which they haven't been this series.
Right. Do you think Channing Frye... So Frye, again, even though Love didn't play, Frye only played 12 minutes. Part of that is because Richard Jefferson has been sipping from the Fountain of Youth and playing extremely well. But part of that is, like, Frye didn't even take a shot tonight.
Yeah, he didn't look that good. Well, actually, tonight he was okay. I think that lineup actually helped us a lot. That Frye, the five lineup, they had a tough time guarding us.
They did.
Especially whenever there's a big guy on their team that's on the floor, like Bogut or something, who's a really good rim protector, I think we need to just go with Frye at the five, because then we can negate his rim protection. Which is, I think, what he did tonight. Tyronn Lue did tonight, which was good.
Yeah. Yeah, Bogut didn't do much tonight, I don't think.
He had a block party last game.
He did. He had one block tonight in 12 minutes. It's so weird. He barely played in game 1 and 3. And in game 2, he blocked everything within, you know, 10 feet of the rim. It's crazy.
Yeah. Bogut's one of those players, at least from this postseason series that I've seen, this season's playoffs that I've seen, that he's so much better at home than he is away from Oracle Arena.
How can that be? Like, what is your hypothesis there?
I don't know, man. These guys just prefer sleeping in their beds.
I guess.
I think the away crowd gets in their head or something. That has to be it, right?
I understand that at Oracle, that crowd. I was there at game one. I've been there a bunch. I was at a finals game last year. It's uncomfortable being there. And
how
part
about
of it is because
not having the Oracle crowd behind you. It's not even like the Cleveland crowd is crazy or anything, but
yeah.
Not having that crowd behind you might be a factor too.
I guess so. You know, they get home cooking as well when they're at home. You know, maybe the routine is more.
It's been shown to be a real thing. Oh, you mean home cooking as in food? Or like...
Yeah. Okay. The officiating tonight, for example, the Cavs had 25 fouls called on them, 23 fouls called on the Warriors. The Warriors shot 26 free throws. The Cavs shot 17 free throws. You know, I don't know.
To me, it looked like, I think, I don't know, I wouldn't call it home cooking, but like Cavs were being pretty physical. I think they could have gotten maybe a few calls here and there, but it definitely would not have changed the outcome of this game.
Yeah, I mean, look, it was a 30-point game. Like, like games 1 and 2, where I sort of felt helpless for the Cavs, it's like, well, they need to fix like 7 things in 3 days. Like, I don't think that's going to happen. Well, somehow it happened, and now the Warriors have to say, like, well, we have to fix 7 things in 2 days. Like, what? This is I don't really know how to parse this, how to react to it. Like, what can we really take away from tonight's game? I guess we can take away the Cavs are in this series. If they can win game 4, it gets a lot more interesting.
Yeah, if they can win game 4, I think we're back in business.
Right. But I mean, I don't know if I feel any better about our chance. I guess I feel a little bit better about our chances of winning game 4 after tonight, but this game, what's been happening is a little bit's been going wrong, and then it snowballs into this huge disaster for the away team.
Like, you saw that in game 2, right? Like, Cavs are kind of in it for like a quarter and a half, and then boom,
right.
That was it.
Right.
Over.
Yeah,
same
that happened
thing
in game
them,
1 in the third quarter, right? Like, the Cavs got up 3 in the third quarter, and then suddenly the Warriors go on like a million to zero run. I think it was
22-1 run or something.
Yeah, something like that. And then it was over. So it's just sort of.
Right. Do you want to talk about momentum quickly? Because I keep hearing momentum's this way, momentum's going that way.
Sure. I mean, I'm sure, like, we think the same thing, but why don't you do your rant first and then I'll just agree with it.
So Cavs were down 2-0. Who do you think had the momentum coming in this game?
Right, the Warriors.
And so what happened to that momentum? Did it just disappear?
Yeah, it just evaporated into so they you know, won the first two by 24. They lost this one by 30. So the you know, a negative 54 point. Oh, wait, 33 points. Wait, how much did we lose? We lost game two by 33. We won this game by 30. So that is a 63 point swing. And I don't care how big you think home court advantage is. If they had momentum, it shouldn't have been that big.
Exactly.
So, yeah. Anyway, we agree that there's no such thing as momentum. It's going out and executing, and
it's just a narrative thing. That's why I hate it. Like, snowballs. Oh, right, exactly. Like, I can see momentum being a thing within the game, if that makes sense.
Yeah, like, it is a like thing in a game. You can see,
I can
the
see
body
like someone
language.
Shooting well and they keep shooting well. Well, not shooting specifically, but like I think I can see if the flow of the game changing, depending on like how a certain player is playing or not, if that makes sense. But between games, I don't think momentum's a real thing, honestly.
Yeah. I agree. So, Kevin Love.
Oh, yeah, let's get to that. So, I know the narrative is that he should come off the bench after this game. But I don't know if that's the narrative, but I know I heard the announcers.
Anticipating that being the narrative.
Right. And then I think the announcers were saying it, too. I think it was
Yeah,
Mark.
I didn't listen to the announcers much tonight, which is probably a blessing in disguise. Do you think Love will be cleared to play game four?
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's the concussion protocol, so...
How does the concussion protocol work?
They ramp up the physical activity he has to do one by one, and then he has to clear every single one of those.
Well, yeah, but what do they ask him questions?
No. This is like, run this march, do this thing, do this thing. I think they showed it on the screen today. I don't remember exactly.
They did show it on the screen, and I don't remember what it was, but for the sake of argument, let's say it's like, okay, you have to like walk, and then you have to trot, and then you have to run, and then you need to sprint.
I think that's probably it.
Is he like unable to sprint? Or is there something he does?
I think
they ask him after he sprints?
Right.
What are those signs? Well, here's my question. You know a little bit more about medicine than me, and maybe the answer is neither of us know, but like, what do they ask him after he does that sprint, or what do they look for while he's doing that sprint to determine objectively whether or not he's okay?
So he has they have these baseline numbers for these guys.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And they have the baseline brain activity too, and I think they're following his brain activity before and after.
Okay. Yeah,
and they do cognitive examinations as well. So there's a lot of things that go into this.
Okay. So yeah, if they have cognitive tests that they did before and after, and they measured your physical performance before and after, then you might notice some differences. I'm a scuba diver, and when you do your deep water certification, they do this thing where you get a board that has like, I think it's a 5x5 grid, maybe it's 6x6 with numbers on it, and they're random. And the instructor tells you a number, and then you need to touch it. And then they tell you a number, and then they need to touch it. I think they actually write down a number, and then you need to touch it because you can't talk underwater, and they want it to be the same. So you do it on the surface, and then they take you down into really deep water, and they do the same thing. And if you're being affected by the depth, apparently there's like a very predictable drop-off in your ability to do that in a timely fashion. So maybe it's something similar for concussions. I hadn't thought of that, if they do a before and after test.
Yeah, they just have the baseline numbers from whenever they do their physicals.
So the only way you could cheat is if you sandbagged on your baseline numbers.
Right. I guess you could
You're
do
like,
that.
I'm anticipating getting some concussions and wanting to play, so I'm going to...
Right.
Yeah.
With the scuba stuff, isn't there like a phenomenon when you go really deep, you can get like a blackout?
Well, you get loopy before you get to a blackout. You have to go very deep, much deeper than recreational divers go before blacking out becomes a risk. But you can get a sort of narcosis that feels a little bit like being like drunk or maybe sort of loopy.
Yeah, I think it's called a martini effect, if I remember correctly.
That might be right.
Anyway, what else?
So, okay, all right. So question one, will Love play? We don't know. But let's say he's eligible to play. What should they do?
Yeah, they should start him. I mean, yeah. I've said this before on Twitter, and I'm going to say it now. This game really had very little to do with Kevin Love, honestly. J.R. Smith going 5 of 10 and playing legitimately well on the defensive end. Kyrie Irving running through screens, like guys rotating well.
Right. Yeah, LeBron, Kyrie, and J.R. Smith shooting the lights out. From
right.
deep two range,
it literally has
nothing
to
do
with Kevin.
If anything, Love creates more space for those guys to take
right.
deep twos.
Right. So. And Cavs won the rebounding battle, but Love is a great rebounder. Like, you, one thing you can say whatever you want about him, but his defensive rebounding is one of the best in the NBA.
Yeah, it's strange. You know, I've been trying to not engage in conversations about the Cavs with the myriad and numerous Warriors fans who surround me at work, but something I've been sort of overhearing people say at lunch and stuff is, well, Kevin Love doesn't matter anyway. Like, he wasn't playing well. And, gosh, I know the eye test on Kevin Love is not good, but the numbers test he passes with flying colors, we do this like every other show. Look, he's number 10 in the NBA in RPM. I will accept an argument that maybe he's not the 10th best player in the NBA, but he's definitely top 20, and not having him on the floor is a huge loss.
We were plus 7 with him on the floor last season. I think plus 6 this season or something.
Yeah.
And that's for a guy who starts, you know, pretty much every single game.
Right. So, okay. Well, we're in agreement here, too. We should...
And if you... And, like, I understand for medical reasons if they don't want to start him, right? Like, if they still think...
Oh, yeah. Look, if he doesn't pass the concussion protocol, then they can't play him, which stinks. I saw some rumblings on Twitter and Reddit about, like, how Kobe Bryant would play or Michael Jordan would play.
Oh, shut up, man.
For starters, Kevin Love isn't making the decision here.
He doesn't even have control over this.
From what I've heard, well, that's why I was curious about the test. I was curious if it's something you can cheat on, but sounds like no. And secondly, yeah, like the NBA, yeah, just doesn't want to do this. I thought it was funny. A guy on Reddit, I won't mention by name in case he doesn't want to be mentioned, but he said Kobe Bryant would have killed the examiners and you know, gone out on the court anyway.
Was he serious or was he joking?
No, he was kidding. He was kidding. He was saying tongue in cheek, like, oh, well, you know, look, he has a concussion. Like, it stinks. It's not like this concussion happened on some sort of like weak contact either. I mean, that
he was looked
that looked painful. Even
I was
slow motion.
He came back, man.
Yeah, well, I don't know whether we should really talk about this even, but I thought the Cavs may have been a little irresponsible by letting him stay.
I thought
in the game.
So, to be honest.
He looked woozy even immediately after. But anyway, hopefully the Cavs don't get fined or penalized in any way for that.
So just medically speaking, there's this thing called second impact syndrome.
Yeah.
So like if someone sustains a second concussion when the first one hasn't fully healed, this person can actually die, and it's legitimately a fatal problem.
Yeah, I think death is, there's definitely an increased risk of death for a second concussion before the first one's clear, but I think there's like other sort of like more...
Yeah, like brain herniation, et cetera.
Right, exactly.
It's a lot of
problems. Yeah, some sort of long-term or medium-term brain damage that maybe even short-term, but it's not immediately detectable, but it's there. And so, yeah, look, I think you and I are on the same page here on concussions. I found some of the chatter about it a little bit irritating today. It's a huge bummer that he's concussed, but he can't play. And it's not up to him. And it shouldn't be up to him.
Right. Exactly. I don't think... I was perfectly fine with the league's decision there. You got to do what's best for the player, and you got to protect him from himself.
Right.
One question for you.
Yeah.
Who do you think has been better, Steph Curry or Kyrie Irving, in this series?
Gosh, that's actually a fairly interesting question.
It's not clear, right? Like, I wouldn't say either.
It's not clear. That's why it's interesting.
Yeah.
I think Steph was like... Well, Steph was number... He's number 4 in RPM right now.
Thought he came back up.
Did they update it? Have they updated it?
Yeah, they updated.
Ooh, I'm excited.
LeBron was like far and away still the best. Yeah, he's 9.12. Steph is 2 now.
So Kyrie is definitely outscoring him.
And they had the same number of assists so far in the 3 games, which is a little disingenuous because I think Kyrie's played more minutes. But
yeah.
And...
I think
rebounding,
Steph's
obviously
true shooting is probably significantly higher. I'm not sure, though.
He's been pretty bad, though, this series.
Yeah, but Kyrie was 7 of 22, 5 of 14, and even tonight he was 12 of 25. Now, that came with 3 out of 3 from the line, 3 out of 7 from 3, and also, actually, he is 14 out of 15 from the line in the series, so Kyrie's true shooting percent. Look, the bottom line here is it's close.
It's close, thing for us.
It comes down to the defense, and I think Steph's is better, and Kyrie has had some... a lot of people have made You know, some people make hype videos. It's been popular during these finals to make Kyrie Irving stinks on defense videos. And they're painful to watch. And yeah, he's not good on defense. But, you know, Curry isn't Gary Payton or Draymond Green out there. So, you know, I'm not sure how much of the difference in offense, which is pretty close anyway. I don't know. I don't know. That's a good question.
Do you think that Moz got fouled today on Clay was quote-unquote intentional? Because Clay is calling it intentional for some reason.
On the screen?
Yeah.
I saw it live, and it was definitely a hard screen.
Clay saying it seemed dirty to me.
I saw it on the replay, and I thought it even shouldn't have been a foul on Mozgov when I saw it on the replay. I will say this: the way that Mozgov sort of locked his arms together, you can sort of infer or imply from that Mozgov was trying to set a hard screen and, you know, put a body into Klay Thompson.
But it's not
even
dirty,
if that is intentional. I don't know if that's really illegal, and if it is, they called an offensive foul on it anyway. So. In the sense that it was dirty, it's more like, okay, let's say LeBron's, let me just try an analogy here. Let's say LeBron's driving to the hoop and somebody doesn't even go for the ball. They just hack across his arms as hard as they can. Okay. You know, they do that like karate chop thing that you see sometimes.
Right.
Is that dirty?
Yeah. It's a foul.
The same amount of dirtiness, I think. I think hard foul.
It's a hard foul, which is like not exactly. Foul.
I mean, all fouls are against the rules. Right. So, like, when does it cross over into dirty? Right. So, yeah, I don't know.
I wouldn't say it's dirty. I think dirty has a connotation attached to it. It's certainly illegal, which, by definition, every foul is.
Yeah. Mozgov was plus 11 tonight.
Well, he played some garbage time at the end, too, right?
Yeah.
He increased the lead from 25 to 30, so.
Yeah, he looked terrible out there.
No, he's not good.
More personal fouls in 6 minutes.
I really wish that the people who keep clamoring for him to start can shut up or even just play him.
Well, you have to understand where they're coming from. I totally agree, but here's where they're coming from, Arnav. They are not numbers and analytics-based people. They remember what happened in the finals last year, and they remember...
Let me tell you what happened.
Let me be clear. They remember what happened. Was it game three? No, it was game four, I think, that he scored 20-something points.
And then he played 5 minutes the next game because their small ball lineup ran us off the floor.
But Arnav, this is what I'm saying. They're not reasonable analytics-based folks, right? They have impressions in their brains left from what they saw with their eyes, and they have selection bias in that, and they're applying that to make decisions about what they think the Cavs should do. That's bad decision making. That's what like the advanced analytics movement is you look at the numbers first and then maybe you sprinkle it with a little bit of your own sort of watching. But that's not how most sports fans are. And it is frustrating. I haven't even bothered to respond to some of the stuff on Twitter or Reddit.
I've stayed away from about it. I'm going
to
stay away.
What is there even to say? Like, you can't argue with people who will respond with, well, I don't like numbers. I just trust what I see. That's not a reasonable response, in my opinion.
There was an article out the other day. I think it was on complex.com or something. Mm-hmm. And the title was pretty straight up. And the title said, Kyrie Irving is overrated. That's it. And then there were some numbers thrown in there about his bad defense, which is fine. I mean, his defense is pretty bad. What do you think of that title? Do you think he's overrated?
What was it? It was Irving is overrated?
That's literally all I said. Kyrie Irving is overrated, and then I just talked about his defense and
Depends who's rating him. I mean, what did I say?
That's my
problem. He's like number 230 in the NBA in RPM. He's rated terribly.
Right, but then who's rating him? That's my question, right? Like,
well,
if
I mean,
it's
look,
Cavs, go ahead.
Arnav, he has a big shoe deal. He's in a bunch of commercials. He's in promotions. They talk about him all the time. So in that sense, if you count that as ratedness, he is overrated. He's definitely overrated. He gets a disproportionate amount of attention for the quality of his play. But, you know, he's handsome, he's likable, he's charming, and his game is very flashy and showy. And so that's why he gets a disproportionate amount of rating, because he's sort of exciting to be a fan of. I think his RPM actually understates his ability. So, I don't know what that even means.
And even, like, I think a lot of that has to do with his injury, though, right? Because last season, he was, what, number 10, I think, in point guards, if I remember correctly.
By RPM?
Yeah.
Maybe.
He was top 10, I think, last season. And for point guards, not overall.
Right.
And in the playoffs, he's been phenomenal. It's like, obviously, not the last two games, but overall, he's been, you know, PR of 25, true shooting of 59, and box plus minus of like 5 or 4.5 or 5 or 6 or something.
He's been great. I mean, last year he was 9 in RPM, and he was less than a point of RPM away from John Wall, who was 4. So he was good last year. The big problem
I get
this
that
year,
he didn't have a good year. Everyone, I think most people, most reasonable people agree that he didn't have a good year. But if you're using like what Cavs homers say about his rating, then yeah, you're just listening to the wrong people. I mean, there are people who overrate LeBron James too. Is he overrated, period?
Yeah, I don't know. It's tempting to get like caught up and wrapped up in some
right.
of this
you're right,
of
you're
stuff.
Right.
It's dangerous too, because you can just drive yourself insane, especially when the Cavs are losing. I get like particularly easily pricked by some of these narratives.
He was so obviously waiting for the Cavs to go down 2-0, so he could come out with that.
I know, he'd probably like pen that piece.
Yep.
Well.
Oh, Tristan Thompson. We should talk about him.
Quickly. Oh yeah.
Gosh. He was amazing.
We almost forgot. So yeah, let me just read his box score, which I think almost understates his
impact today,
his game. So he played 31 minutes and 1 second. He was plus 21. He was 5 of 6 from the field. Arnav, he was 4 of 5 from the line. He had 13 rebounds. 6 of those were offensive. 2 assists. No turnovers.
That's a big
points.
Deal. 2 assists.
2 assists might be a career high for Tristan Thompson. Only 2 fouls and 14 points. He did get blown by Klay Thompson once on defense, but otherwise I thought his defense was outstanding. He would well, and like, why is Tristan out there guarding Klay one-on-one?
It happens.
He was just, I mean, and his energy, his fire, like after a couple of his buckets, did you see him like screaming and, you know, pumping his fists? Like,
home court, man. Home court. I keep saying
it. It was so much fun to watch him tonight.
It really sucks that we don't have home court.
Yeah.
It really sucks. We may actually be up 2-1 right now.
Is
if we
it
had
just
home.
Me, or hasn't the narrative in years past been like, oh, home court doesn't matter?
It's getting worse, yeah. Well, statistically, you got from 3-2 from what Bob Vulgar said once,
yeah.
If you buy his. But I don't know, this postseason has been crazy.
It went from being a 3-point advantage to now it's a 2-point advantage overall in the
Yeah,
this
overall,
year.
Yeah. That's what he was saying.
But not in these playoffs.
Not in these playoffs, man.
Huh.
So, Tristan, let me see. Yeah, the 4 or 5 is kind of interesting, too, from the line.
Yeah. Awesome.
I'm trying to look up his numbers at home versus away. Give me a second. You can keep talking.
Tristan, yeah. It's I always like it when Tristan does well, because he's just so likable. Like when he does poorly, it's almost like watching a puppy after you've sort of like, you know, chided it for something. It just looks so sad. And I feel that way about Tristan. Like he's so earnest. Like he's trying so hard out there and he wants to get better. And watching him succeed, I don't know, for me is always sort of like a special, yeah, like a more I get more satisfaction out of watching him succeed as I do others. I have his home and away splits if you're interested.
Yeah, I got 65 and 59% free throw percentage, which is actually not that much, so yeah. Never mind.
Yeah.
Did you know Tristan actually outplayed Draymond for 4 games of the finals last year? The first 4 games, I think.
Is that right? I did not know
Yeah,
that.
He was much better than Draymond was in the first 4 games.
Well, he definitely outplayed him tonight.
Yeah. No, I'm excited for Tristan, I think. He just needs to find a way to channel this energy when he's on the road as well.
Yeah.
Because we're definitely going to need it next game as well as game 5.
Yeah. Got to get game 4.
Yeah.
If the Cavs lose Friday, I think we lose in 5.
Probably, yeah, because I think it'll be tough to beat them at home when they're closing out.
Right.
But if Cavs win next game, man, we're back in business.
What do you think the odds they win game 4 are?
So I know you had 30% or something like that. Is that correct?
I had 30% for tonight.
I actually was close to 50, honestly, because I knew, or I didn't know, but I thought home court was a big deal for the Cavs. So I was closer to 50-55%, honestly. And I think
I know that's what the number said. That's what 538 said. That's what a bunch of things said. But yeah, like after Love went down, it was like, well.
Yeah, I know. I brought it down after Love went down, of course, yeah. But I mean, like before Love went down, I was close to like 50-55%.
Yeah. Let's say Love does play. Would you say 60 now?
No, it's a. Okay.
So you have not been budged much by the result of tonight. Your prior hasn't changed.
No, especially because okay. Okay, let's put it this way. If, like, Cavs lost the first two games by, like, 2 points combined and then won this by 30,
yeah,
I'd probably say Cavs were 60% in favorites.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
But they've also been blown out, so it's not like...
Right, right. I reluctantly agree. I was hoping you were going to say otherwise, but I agree.
Oh, yeah, like, 55 is where I'm going to stick to.
Yeah. All right, well, you have anything else you want to talk about?
What's your official prediction now? Is it still Cavs and Warriors in five?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think mine was Warriors in seven, so I'm going to stick to that. I think we can make it interesting.
I hope so. I hope you're right. Well, I mean, look, I hope it's Cavs in seven or Cavs in six, but...
Yeah, I mean, if we get to game seven, like, obviously we'll be underdogs, but that's better than, you know, most expected.
Well, I'd rather be going into a game seven than the position we're going into now, I think. Yeah, I think that. I'd have to look at that. That's actually an interesting question.
I wouldn't, honestly. See, you asked me this before, and I said I would. But yeah. I rethought it, and at least according to my numbers, Cavs had a 35% chance to win the series.
Uh-huh.
But then in a game seven, you know, 20-25 is at best on the road.
Yeah, but that 35% thing included chances of winning games one and two.
Yeah, there was a 50% chance they would have pulled out one of those two games.
Yeah.
Which they didn't, which is fine. I mean, still, every team that's been favored so far, according to my model, has won, so.
Yeah. It's really funny, like, yeah, these numbers. I mean, these numbers, they've been right so far, but, like, never has it predicted the blowouts of the magnitude we've seen. It's just so bizarre.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's yeah. The thing is, the averages, though. Kind of makes sense, right? Like, if you look at the net rating so far, I think it's Warriors, I think, have a 6 or 7 point net
rating.
You're
right. It is probably averaging out to about what we would have expected.
Right. I think just the variance has been so high this season is the issue.
Right. Yeah, high variance, same mean.
Right.
It's bizarre.
Okay. That's all I had for today. If you had anything else.
Nope. That's it for me, too.
Should we talk about last podcast or whatever?
Yeah, let's briefly talk about that. So we did not podcast after game two. I'll just say why I didn't want to, and then you can say whether you didn't want to because I didn't want to, or maybe you had another reason, but I think I definitely didn't want to. I was really, really depressed. Like, I'm still just sort of generally bummed out by what I think is a confirmation of my fear that the Warriors are just better. And better in such a way that they're just really kind of unbeatable by this current iteration of the Cavs. And that makes me upset. And the way the Cavs lost games one and two was particularly brutal. And yeah, I just couldn't really muster up the energy to really just, yeah, like doing this takes a little bit of, energy for me. I have to sort of get up for it a little bit. I enjoy doing it, but it takes like an investment of some gas. And I don't know, I just didn't really feel like doing it. There was also sort of a logistics issue. These games are ending really late.
And yeah.
I like watching the post-game stuff. So but I think I'm lying if I say the logistics were the only problem.
Yeah, of course.
I was bummed out. And, you know, a lot of our listeners, we got some emails, we got some comments on Reddit, we got some tweets saying, hey, guys, you know, we really like your show and it was a bummer not to have it. And, yeah, I guess I apologize for that. I'll try to get up for future Cavs losses. I'm not going to make any promises, but I'm gonna try to be a little bit more adult about this and try not to get as down as I do. But it's tough. Like, even though I think the Cavs are going to lose, I can't protect myself against hope. I hope they're going to win, and I can't
especially when they blow out a team.
Yeah, I can't intellectualize away my hope. Like, the hope is there regardless of how low I think the odds are. So having your hope crushed in the way it was in games one and two was rough. So anyway, that's my
Yeah, you always convince, like, not you personally, but like people always convince themselves, you know, even after going down 2-0, oh, maybe if Cavs win the next two home games, they'll be back in the series. Which, I mean, if they do, they will be back in the series. But like, even when you're down, you know, 1-0 or 2-0, even in like, if you're down 10 points at the beginning of the fourth, you always think of ways that the Cavs can make a comeback. So there's always hope, even though it's not logical, but it's always in the back of your head.
Yeah.
For me, it was a couple of reasons. One, I didn't want to force you. Number two was that I honestly didn't learn anything from game two.
Anything That's a good point.
Different from game two, from game one. Like, to me, it was they played pretty much the exact same way, just way worse in every facet. And Clay and Curry actually made the shots that game, honestly.
Right. Yeah, there wasn't a whole lot of interesting stuff to dig into. So my process, I keep a legal pad next to my TV, and I sort of write down things as we go along. And I normally have a bunch of notes, and I sort of distill it down into some things I want to talk about on the show. That day, my legal pad just had a big frowny face on it, which basically summarized what happened in that game. Like, everything went wrong. The Cavs didn't play their game. The Warriors did play theirs. And it was like, well, I don't know what to say about this. That combined with my downness.
Right.
Kind of what happened.
Yeah. One thing I want to say is I'm traveling this week. So if I'm not able to do the next podcast, it is because I'm traveling, and it has nothing to do with the result of the next game.
Sure, Arnav, whatever you say.
Yeah.
I bet you find a way to do it if they win.
I don't know, man. I'm going to be in a hotel, so we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right, well, enough of the meta talk. This has been episode 33 of Cavalytics. You can email us at cavalyticsnba@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at cavalyticsnba. And we will be coming back at you probably after game 4 on Friday. I believe it is a 9 o'clock Eastern game.
Yeah.
It is 9 o'clock
Eastern. Only the Sunday ones are 8 o'clock. But yeah.
Right. Makes sense. Okay. Go Cavs.